So what I want to try to do tonight is just talk about a subject that I think will probably be relevant for many of you or most of you. At some stage, as leaders, it'll be relevant for all of you. And it's for me, it's a subject that you never kind of fully master it, obviously, but I think it's like a leadership edge, so to speak. It's for many, maybe for some of you in the room, it's like it's the threshold that's like keeping you from going any further as a leader. And this is not so that you can earn leader merit badges and like get like be like the best like leader in the church kind of thing. We want to be better leaders so we can lead people better, right? We want to be better leaders so we can lead people better. That's why we want to be better leaders. So what we want to talk about tonight is a tough subject, and that is how to handle it when somebody chooses sin over Jesus. And what does it look like when you're the person trying to lead them and that's what they choose to do? So I think it's just worth saying at the beginning that ministry is harder than we think it is. It's harder than we think it is. The easiest thing in the whole wide world, I mean, the most amazing thing, most worthwhile thing, and maybe the reason that you and I are in this room is because of an experience where we discipled somebody who wanted to be discipled. I've got this guy who I met on a hunting trip, as crazy as that sounds, and God just put our hearts together. This guy does not know Jesus. He's in a world surrounded by guys who do not know Jesus, and he ended up out here for the summer for some other reasons, and he did not like church. He did not think much of Jesus, but he wanted to come and check out what we do because him and I had met and had this great little interaction. And I sat with him this last week. He's heading back now to school in Chicago or outside of Chicago. And we had this amazing chat where this guy is basically saying, as a result of being here this summer and visiting One Harbor, he's already called his roommate in college and told him, we're going to read through the Gospel of John when I get back, and I'm going to learn about Jesus, and I want you to learn about Jesus. And he's just like, teach me about Jesus. Can we talk? Tell me what church to go to. I'll be there this Sunday. I mean, he's just absolutely just like alive wanting to learn about Jesus, you know, absolutely phenomenal. And it's not often that I get to do that much anymore. And it was such a privilege. And I was like, gosh, man, this is the stuff that made me think, hey, I want to start a church one day, because I'm sure that's all you do, is you just sit with people all day long, and all they want to do, they just want to sit at your feet and just tell me how to be like Jesus, right? That I want to be in ministry because I love doing that, you know? And maybe you had an experience like that where you helped someone, you know, come from, you know, because they knew you, or they worked around you, or they lived in your neighborhood, or they were related to you, or, man, some strength, you ended up being this vessel that God used, that Jesus used to lead them to him. And it's just it's the most amazing thing in the whole wide world. It's the most amazing thing. And so we get excited about that stuff. And I think a lot of times we go into leadership thinking that's what it looks like to be a leader when it comes to the church. And the reality is, I think what most of us find is that right away, you end up dealing with pretty tough stuff a lot. And it's not always as invigorating and as exciting as those moments are when you're with somebody who really wants to know about Jesus. And I think it makes me think, you know, I mean, aren't we Christians? You know, don't the people in our community groups or in our church or whatever, don't they know they're not Jesus, and don't they want to be more like Jesus? And don't they know that's going to mean that they have to change their life? I mean, isn't that what everyone already just knows? Don't we know that? We're not Jesus. We want to be like Jesus, so we have to change to be like Jesus. Why does it happen? Why does it seem like that we as leaders are always dealing with people who don't want to be led? Why do we feel like sometimes we're always leading people who don't want to be led? We're trying to help people change, and they don't want to change. Why does it feel like we're doing that so much? I'll tell you what I think we might be dealing with. And that's this: small views of God lead to small views of change. I think a lot of the people that we find in church today, especially in the South, you know, we've inherited these guys from other churches and other leaders and other experiences with Christianity. And at those probably various other experiences, what I find often is that those people, they weren't led, they were coddled. No one discipled them. People just told them what they wanted to hear. And they've never been told no. You know, they've never been told that this is wrong. They've never been told you have to change. You know, a lot of people, they've filled out a card or said a prayer or got baptized or joined a church or something, and no one ever told them that they needed to count the cost. You know, this guy this last week that I met with, the last little meeting I had with him, I told him that I was sure that he wasn't a Christian yet, but that Jesus was after him, and that he was be very short amount of time before he became a Christian. But I told him, you need to really seriously count the cost, because this is going to be a lot harder than you think. And I know that right now you think, this means that I can't sleep with my girlfriend and get drunk. Check, check. But it means a whole lot more than that. And I can't even tell you all the things it means yet. You just need to really right now think about, you need to count the cost. I think a lot of times we try to close a deal, get people to say a prayer in the first 5 minutes. And what it creates, I think, I don't think anybody meant to do this, but what I think it creates is we create the sense where Jesus is either needy or he's a pushover. He's either like some Amway kind of deal where he like just needs signatures, you know, or he just doesn't really care. He'll take whatever he can get. And, you know, you could, if, hey, I don't like that. Oh, twist my arm. Okay, okay. Like, he's either needy or he's a pushover. So people go into Christianity with a very weak, a very small view of Jesus, who was anything but a needy pushover, right? He's a leader of leaders, the only true God. His kingdom is coming. His will be done. It will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So guys go into following Jesus with very low expectations of him. And they expect Jesus will basically cater to them with no expectations of him causing them any trouble, right? That is a recipe for disaster. People go into Christianity expecting that Jesus will cause them very little trouble at all. So they end up quite surprised when that leads to massive change in their life. When following Jesus actually means they have to change. People end up surprised. And the only way they could possibly be surprised is they were duped into Christianity that wasn't really Christianity, you know? So then they scramble for verses in the Bible that tell us that we're wrong or that you're wrong. And, you know, they want to be left alone. They want to simultaneously be called a Christian. And what I think we have to be honest about is that following Jesus is incredibly hard, right? Let me read you a couple quotes by C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis is great on this. He says, "The terrible thing, the almost impossible thing, is to hand over your whole self, all your wishes and precautions to Christ. But it's far easier than what we are all trying to do instead." He's like, it's really hard. You got to hand everything over, but it's easier than what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is maintain what we call, quote, ourselves, to keep personal happiness as our great aim in life, and yet, at the same time, try to be good. We're trying to let our mind and our heart go their own way, centered on money or pleasure or ambition, and hoping, in spite of all this, to behave honestly and chastely and humbly. And this is exactly what Christ warned us you could not do. The Christian way is different. It's harder and easier. Christ says, give me all. I don't want so much of your time and so much of your money and so much of your work. I want you. I have not come. This is such a brutal line. I read this like 12 years ago and almost drove off the side of the road. He said, I have not come to torment your natural self, but to kill it. No half measures are any good. I do not want to cut off a branch here and a branch there. I want to have the whole tree down. I don't want to drill one tooth or crown it or stop it, but to have it out. Hand over the whole natural self, all the desires which you think innocent as well as the ones you think wicked, the whole outfit. I will give you a new self instead. In fact, I will give you myself. My own will shall become your will. So that's this Jesus biblical standard that just most people aren't operating with. So I think that's probably why we deal with a lot of the pushback. People don't want to be led. They don't want to change because they have a very small view of Jesus. And so small view of Jesus means small view of him wanting to change us, right? Okay, so what do you do when you face such a person? Give in? Do you quit? Do you question if you were really supposed to be a leader? I mean, all those things feel very natural. The first thing I think you should do is remember what you're doing, and that's leading. And leaders, by definition, we are helping people do what people don't want to do. That's what leaders do. We help people do what they would not do on their own. That's what a leader does, okay? If you get a trainer, right? Say I go get a trainer at Gold's Gym, and I walk in, I just say, man, it's like 5:30. You know, I kind of want to be here, but tell you the truth, man, I kind of want to be over at, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings right now. It's like Thursday, 60 cent for these little boneless things. You know, imagine my trainer's like, dang, that sounds awesome. Let's do it, you know? Now, that would not be a good trainer, right? I would be paying this guy to hit me when I suggest that we go eat wings or ice cream instead of work out, because he's my trainer. He's supposed to make me do what I don't want to do. That's why I'm paying him, because I don't have the self-will to do this by myself, right? That's what it means to be a leader. If all you do is hang out with people on the way till, you know, we all die, well, you can call it a lot of things, but you can't call it leadership. Good leaders, by definition, are those who take you somewhere you wouldn't have gone by yourself. You literally needed to be led there. That's why you needed a leader, because that person had to lead you. That's what it means to be a leader. We're not spectators in people's lives. We're proactive. We're not co-participators in their sin. We're catalytic in their holiness. We never stop reminding them of the gospel. That's our job. Paul says in Ephesians 4:1, I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, look how far this has taken me, he said, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called. He's like, I'm urging you to live out this thing that you say happened to you. Walk, make your life look like this. It needs to mirror this. And he's writing from prison. It's not just like he's, you know, passing the time. He's got a mission for this letter. And why would Paul even have to tell them this if they weren't doing the opposite, you know? He's urging them because they needed to be urged. Leaders urge people. I'm urging you. I'm telling you. I'm commanding you. I'm begging you. I mean, there's all these, like, words that are used in the New Testament to tell us how we as leaders are meant to get people up off their butts and moving towards the cross. That's what we're doing. We're leading them, right? So, I think one of the first things we can do when we face people who don't want to be led is just settle. As a leader, you and I will be face-to-face with a whole lot of tensions, right? We'll be face-to-face with a lot of tension. There's a phrase, Brian and Brian are my two military advisories in the church, and now added to that, Joe on staff. Brian was telling me today there's this kind of military phrase, we run to the sound of the guns, and how there's this counter, you know, that's counterintuitive. Because when you hear gun, you want to run, right? You want to run away from it. But they're taught as soldiers to run to the sound of guns, right? What's that? What did I call you? Oh, my gosh. Oli, do you know where Brian lives? Can you get the coordinates of his house and do a little flight mission later? Okay, fine. Fair enough. Okay, so as Marines, wow, we could talk about your duck hunting experience, and I don't think you were doing a whole lot with any gun. So, tell you what, I hope our soldiers have a better handle on guns than you had when you were duck hunting. All right, anyone else want to make a comment? Floor's open. Okay, so the point is that as leaders, we're running to the tension, okay? You see a tension, you run to it, okay? This is what this looks like. Let me break it down real practical. After community group, you're cleaning up, and you overhear someone say something, and a little alarm goes off in your head. Uh-oh, that's bad. Now, at that moment, what do? Most of us go, didn't hear anything. I just pray, Lord, you know? That's not what a leader does. Leader goes, okay, you wash these dishes, you, outside. We got to talk about this. Because that's attention, and we're going to run to it. That's guns. We're running to it. Okay? We run to tension. You're going to be face-to-face with a lot of tension. What kind of mindset do you need? You know, when people are pushing back on you and you feel temptation to compromise, because you feel it and I feel it. We feel it. We can talk such a good game, but we feel this temptation to give in, to compromise. We just want to be liked. We want to cave in, right? What do? Let me encourage you to do this. As leaders, see the long-term goal, see the big picture. Keep it in mind. Always keep the long-term goal in mind. If someone makes camp in their sin, it will always have an effect on other people. And so what happens is when you and I compromise with one person's little sin, what we're doing is guaranteeing that that's gonna have a consequence on somebody else later. If we don't deal with it, it will deal with us. That's what we talked about a couple weeks ago. Sin doesn't act like a bullet. Sin acts like a bomb. And so if you hear the, you know, beep, beep, beep of the timer of the bomb going off, you're like, it's not that big a deal. It's a matter of time before someone else or others get taken out by it. John Owen, I love John Owen so much that Jed's middle name is Owen. He's just brilliant. And he said this, he said, be killing sin or it be killing you. And that's just it. There's no neutral place there. You're either killing it or it's killing you. And as a leader, you're either killing it or it's killing the people you're leading. Okay? This often gets misunderstood as very cruel and harsh. Let me read to you a passage of the Bible that does not often get read. Leviticus 13, 45 through 46. The leprous person, now there's a whole lot going on here, but if I started reading through this, people would get nauseous and whatever. So you can read it at home. Verse 45, the leprous person who has the disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head hang loose. And he shall cover his upper lip and cry out, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. Now, that sounds kind of hectic. What God's concerned about here is the health of the whole body. That's what God's concerned about. And it seemed harsh to tell somebody that they were unclean. And it might seem harsh to put someone outside the camp. It's like a parade here. Is everything okay? Okay. Sorry, it's one of those weeks. It seems harsh to say you're unclean. I mean, this is kind of like the scarlet letter thing, it feels like. It's harsh to say, now you, with your disease, are going to be by yourself with your disease outside the camp with your disease. That sounds really harsh. Doesn't sound loving at all, right? Okay? So it's a lot more loving, though, than letting everyone else's arms fall off from leprosy, right? Thank you, Jess. It's hard to get an amen out of preaching Leviticus. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you and I as leaders are making decisions for the health of the whole. That's, at the end of the day, that's just what it is. And it's not unloving. I mean, they still love the person who's outside the camp with leprosy, but they just couldn't let that person live with leprosy and let everyone else get sick. Practically, how do you deal with people who don't want to be changed? Well, let me give you a couple things to help with messy ministry. The Bible's got a ton to say. Matthew 18 is brilliant as far as how to handle someone who's in sin. And it starts off, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. This is the washing dishes. Hang on a second. You and I outside. Let's talk about this, right? If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. There's real potential. Especially the earlier you jump on something, the better likelihood you have of it getting nipped in the bud. The first signs of trouble in a marriage, it's a lot easier to deal with that than it is once they've all gone off and cheated on each other like crazy. The earlier you jump in on it, the easier you can win your brother back. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you. It's interesting. Jesus said, he doesn't say, if he doesn't listen, go, well, you say potato, I say potato, right? I guess we'll agree to disagree. He says, if he doesn't listen to you, go get somebody else and go back. Jesus doesn't see a world where we exist and we just watch people sin and we go, just your choice. If he does not listen, take one or two brothers along with you, depending on how big the guy is, take two. Or one, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. He's like, you know what's going to happen? They're going to tell everybody you said such and such. Bring witnesses. There's a record function on your iPhone. It works awesome. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. Wah, wah, wah. Nobody wants to do that, right? It's better than everybody's arms falling off. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, the whole church is saying, you don't get to live like this, then let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. He's not a believer. So a couple little practical things, and we're going to be done. One, you go after it, right? You hear it, you go after it. Often what happens is people call us. Hey, you'll never guess what I heard last night while I was washing the dishes. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be that kind of day, right? Usually what we find is that a lot of times people want to host a fun evening and then want us to deal with all the crap. And the Bible says that you can go to your brother who's in sin, right? And some of you might just need some courage. And maybe some of you need to go, hey, I think I've got a problem. I want everybody to like me. That's impossible. I'm a trainer. They're not going to like me. I got to tell them, you're fat. We got to stop eating. You know, like, that's my job, you know? That's what a trainer does. A leader tells people the stuff they don't want to hear and takes them on and takes them somewhere. That's what you got to do. Get some courage, all right? Last thing you can do is stand back and watch. That's really cruel, right? Okay, go after it. Number two, be prepared for a fight. Listen to this little phrase Jesus says. Go and tell him his fault. Who in this room, don't raise your hand, woke up this morning and said, you know, Jesus, you know what I really need today? If you could send some just brothers and sisters just to tell me my fault. I'll just be like, thank you for telling me my fault. I just wanted to know my fault. Nobody wants to know their fault. Nobody in this room wants to be told they're doing anything wrong, including me. That's our natural self. We don't want to be told we're doing anything wrong. This is going to come with resistance. You tell people they're wrong, they're going to go, no, I'm not. You're wrong. I saw you. You were wrong. That's what people do. That's what Adam and Eve did. I didn't do it. No, you did it. No, you did it. No, the snake did it. You know, there's all this like... Remember, many people think Jesus is only there to scratch their back and give them everything they want, and you're there to love and support them, which means you're there to mind your own business. Many people think, because they're a small view of Jesus and they're even smaller view of leadership, that Jesus is there to scratch their back and you're there to love and support them, which means mind your own business. But if you're leading, you're going to face tensions, and that means it's going to get tense, right? So go after it. Be prepared to fight. Another thing is know when to get an elder involved. Know when to call a friend. Use a lifeline. Go get help. The leprosy thing is interesting because the leprosy thing had all camp implications, which meant that if this didn't get dealt with, everyone was going to get sick. And so what it says again and again and again is Leviticus 13, that they had to take them to a priest and that priest would inspect them. And sometimes there's just situations that you need someone who's in higher leadership than you, who deals with this stuff on a more regular basis, unfortunately, who can inspect the situation and try to navigate through it. And that is not because we like drama. I'm telling you, we hate drama. We don't like dealing with all this stuff. But we understand that because we deal with it so much, we might have a different handle on it. We might be able to help you think through some stuff. The point is you just need some discernment to think through that. Good rule of thumb, we're always here for you. If you need us, just call and get advice. We won't cater to gossip. So we're not going to be like, hey, guess what so-and-so's doing? Or like, okay, well, guess what you're doing? You're now going to go deal with so-and-so, you know? We're not going to cater to gossip, but we will help you, give you some advice. Or we might even be able to say to you, man, you know what? Okay, thanks for telling us. Actually, this one's it's a big deal. We're going to jump in here. So a lot of times what we find is we just get called after it's gone too far and it's too late. So, yeah. No, you can't change anyone. This is a big one. You didn't die on a cross and rise from the dead. Don't act like you did. Trust Jesus. Don't trust yourself. Trust Jesus. We're hopeless unless God shows up. Paul and Apollos. You don't have to know much about the Bible to know Paul's a big deal. And Paul said that he was nothing until God showed up and made things grow. And what you and I do is helpful, it's necessary, but it doesn't give life. Only Jesus does. I mean, we do a lot of good things, but we don't turn hearts of stone into hearts of flesh. Jesus does. We say really nice things, and we're good at praying for people, but we don't open blind eyes. We just don't. That's what God does. That'll help you sleep better at night. Otherwise, you get pressured by the wrong stuff and you feel like a failure. Remember, the mission is the most important thing. This sounds terrible. And at first, it sounds unlike anything Jesus would ever say. Aren't people first? Well, the mission is reaching people, so yes, but individual people are not first. The mission's first. At Jesus' most crucial moment in his entire leadership on earth, he said that following him was a lot less like clicking like on his Facebook page and a lot more like eating his flesh and drinking his blood. That went down like a lead balloon, and 20,000 people walked away from Jesus when he said that. Seems like he had 20,012 followers, and they say about 20,000 walked away. And they literally walked away saying this to each other, "This is too hard. Who can listen to it?" Right? Jesus has set the bar too high. It's too hard to follow Jesus, 20,000 people say. So Jesus got this fork in the road. What does he do? Does he turn to the 12 and say, "How are we going to get these guys back? We lost all of our big donors," right? Or, "Well, there went all the good Sunday attenders," or "There went all," I mean, what does Jesus do? Sit down and reconsider. "Gosh, you know what? Father, I think I am being a little too harsh. Maybe I should water this down a bit." This is what Jesus does. John 6, verse 66 to 67. After this, many of the disciples turned back and no longer walked with him. So, very next thing, Jesus said to the 12, "Well, do you want to go away as well?" What in the world is with Jesus? I mean, that is harsh, man. Harsh. He loses 20,000 people and turns to the only 12 little people left and goes, "All right, what do y'all want to do? Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you," you know? What Jesus basically says is, this is the mission. This is what it means to follow me. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. I'm not negotiating those terms. I'm not doing it, even if all of you leave. So that's the mission. If you want to stay, you can stay. But we're not changing the mission, so you stay. The mission is more important than the people, because it's God's mission. And God knows how to save people better than you and I. So Jesus was courageous, and we should be courageous. People will come and go, and we should hold the line. Because at the end of the day, it's Jesus' mission, not ours. Couple more little quick ones. One, keep watch over your own souls. Watch out for disappointment that creeps into your heart and trumps your faith and your joy. I got a feeling for some of you, tonight was the first time you've been excited about Jesus in a long time. Because you're weary from leadership. Because you've let people and their crap take away your faith and your joy. And you can't do that. You got to keep watch over your own soul. You got to keep getting excited about Jesus, even when people are hard to lead. Some of you guys create unrealistic expectations. This guy on the stage creates a lot of unrealistic expectations. And I have to just go to Jesus and say, "All right, help me again." Be careful. Despair is a powerful thing. And if you see it taking over in your life, don't say, "Well, I'll just try harder." Reach out to people in this room and say, "Pray for me. Despair is creeping in on my soul." Keep watch over your life, your family, your time with Jesus, your personal fight with sin. All that stuff is ground zero for your leadership and my leadership. Holiness is massive. And the Bible says that we are held to a higher standard because we're leaders. And we're never off the clock when it comes to holiness. Watch out, guys. The enemy takes you out and won't be right in the middle of your community group, and it won't be on Sunday morning when you're serving. It'll be when you're doing something stupid and you weren't even thinking. Watch out. Know that none of us have it all figured out, and all of us have to call a friend all the time. The Bible says wisdom is in that. And finally, the real work is done by God over our lifetime. He's in a process, and you know what? Sometimes we get so discouraged because somebody leaves and they leave upset. But you know what? Maybe some of you in this room left upset somewhere else. And then a couple years later, God just patiently brought your little backside right in here and dealt with that junk that should have got dealt with back there, but you went and made camp in it for a while. But God finally gets his way. Just trust God. If somebody gets mad and leaves, just trust God. God will sort them out. That's it. Larry Osborne told me a couple years ago, and it really just was a fork in the road for me. It sounds silly to think that this was such a fork in the road, but long story short, he told me that you know people have left his church by the hundreds, and he's running like 10,000. I guess it takes hundreds of people to notice. But he said people have left by the hundreds. They go and they tell everybody in town what a piece of junk he is and all the rest. He said, you know what I do? I said, no. I've got a few ideas, but I don't think that's what you do. He said, I go home, I go to bed, I get up, and I do it all over again because Jesus told me to. He's like, who cares? Just get on with it. And if people got mad at you and left your community group, who cares? Just get on with it. God will send new people. Hold the line. Love Jesus.